Good afternoon. My name is Alwyn Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, March 22nd, 2023. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record will reflect who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Einhorn.
Here.
Commissioner Fusashi. Mr. Hankins.
Here.
Mr. Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, here. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting March 8th, 2023. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move adoption of the commission's minutes of the regular meeting of March 8th, 2023.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2021-0216, Albert Farah versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction et al. Are you there, Mr. Farah?
I think he chose not to participate.
I'd entertain a motion.
I don't know if this is a state anything you say.
I would just urge adoption of the hearing officer's report as Attorney General
for
the respondent. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the complainant did not wish to attend and there's no objection to the respondent, and it was a dismissal, I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Next is FIC 2021-0219, David Taylor versus Executive Director, Connecticut Sentencing Commission et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? This was withdrawn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0284, Jason Milligan versus Office Corporation Counsel, City of Norwalk et al. Jason Milligan, are you there? Is there anyone here from the City of Norwalk? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's no order in this case. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0304, Richard Lindquist versus Richard Simon, Administrator, Academic Merit Plan Executive Committee, State of Connecticut, University of Connecticut et al. This was a failure to prosecute. Is there anybody here on this matter?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. What's your name?
Lindquist, Richard R.
Would you like to be heard, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anybody else here on this matter?
Respondent through counsel is here, Mr. Chairman.
Attorney
Simpson. Thank you.
Are you with the Attorney General's office?
With the UConn Office of the General Counsel.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Attorney Simpson. Thank you, Mr. Lindquist. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0145, Rachel Baird versus Mayor, Town of Weathersfield et al. Is Rachel Baird there, please? Is there anyone here from the Town of Weathersfield, please?
And Senator Helen Sage, representing the town.
Ken Slater?
Yes.
Would you like to be heard?
We would urge that the commission could proceed with the order recommended by the hearing officer.
I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the complaint is not here, there's no objection to the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Simpson.
Thank you.
Slater.
Slater. Sorry, I apologize. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0161, Cliff Brown versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Is Cliff Brown there, please?
Evan Parzik, Connecticut Innocence Project, counsel for the movement.
Okay. Would you like to be heard?
I would just urge the commission to adopt the hearing report, the hearing officer's report in full.
Is Cliff Brown there, please?
Being represented by.
I'm sorry, is there anyone there from Bridgeport? Sorry.
That's Dina Scalo, Office of the City Attorney for the respondents. I'd like to be heard, please.
Okay, we'll mark that right. Thank you, Attorney Scalo. Representing Mr. Brown, I didn't get your name, please.
Evan Parzik.
P-A-R-S-E.
P-A-R-Z-Y-C-H.
Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0169, Jermaine Rogers versus Office, City Attorney, City of Bridgeport et al. Is Jermaine Rogers there, please?
Yes.
Would you like to be heard, Mr. Rogers?
Yes, I would.
Okay, is there anyone here from the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, Dean Scalo again for the respondents. I'd like to be here as well.
Okay. Mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0174, Polly Nugent versus Chief Police Department, Town of Guilford et al. Are you there, Polly Nugent?
Mark Samaruga for Pullman and Conley is present.
You're representing?
Polly Nugent.
Okay.
I have to this report be adopted. I'm not sure there's anyone here to oppose it.
Is there anyone
to oppose it? I just want to be heard very, very briefly.
Attorney?
Tucker McQueenie for the respondents.
Attorney Tucker McQueenie?
Yes.
Thank you, Attorney McQueenie. Thank you, Attorney Samaruga. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0199, Deanna Bouchard versus Andreas Bispikos, First Selectman, Town of Colchester et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Good afternoon. Julie Jakeways on behalf of the respondents.
State your name again, please.
Julie Jakeways.
Spell that, please.
J-A-Q-U-A-Y-S.
And you're an attorney?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then Ms. Bouchard?
Yes, sir.
And we'll mark that ready. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0200, Louise Muzio versus Fire Marshal, Town of Prospect, and Town of Prospect. Is there anyone here on this matter?
Good afternoon, David Hardy on behalf of the respondents.
Would you like to be heard? This was a failure to prosecute, no, and dismissal.
Just urge adoption of the
I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, the complainant failed to appear and was admonished for not doing so. It was dismissed. I move no objection to the respondent. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankinson.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. Those in favor, Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is FIC 2022-0298, Louis DeMuzio versus Antonio Muniz, Fire Marshal, Town of Prospect, and Town of Prospect. Council?
Good afternoon. Again, David Hardy on behalf of the respondents, urging adoption of the report.
Mr. Muzio, are you there? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, as in the last case, failure to appear, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Mr. Hankin, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. All those in favor, Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0294, Christine Liso versus Chief Police Department, Town of New Milford. Police Department, Town of New Milford, et al. Is there anyone here on this matter? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this claim failed to appear and was advised for doing so. So you know it's here. I move adoption.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call. All those in favor, Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Last is docket number FIC 2022-0374, John DeLorio versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Banking, et al. Are you there, Mr. DeLorio?
Yes.
Where are you?
Right here.
Okay. Would you like to be heard?
Yes.
All right. Is there anyone here from the State of Connecticut on that matter?
Assistant Attorney General John Langmaid.
John Lang?
Langmaid.
Spell it, please.
L-A-N-G-M-A-I-D.
Spelled?
L-A-N-G-M-A-I-D.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. DeLorio. So before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As the Chairman indicated, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety, so there's no need to ask for a recording, and the recording of the meeting will be available on our website soon after today's meeting. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments 10 minutes per side. I'll keep track of that for the parties. And one other matter, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that on the agenda we had 2022-0157,
yes.
Martin and Lillian Hainer versus Selectman Town of Greenwich. And that matter, just to make the record clear, was marked off at the request, I believe, of the complainants. It was marked off by staff before the meeting.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. All right, so the first matter that was marked ready is FIC 2020-0304, Richard Lindquist versus Richard Simon, Administrator, Academic Merit Plan, Executive Committee, State of Connecticut, University of Connecticut, et al. Will the parties please come forward? Mr. Lindquist, why don't you just sit right there, please? And your attorney, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. So, Mr. Lindquist, would you like to begin? Would you like to begin, sir?
Do I have an option to?
No. You're the one that's most agrees. This was a failure to prosecute. You didn't come to the hearing.
Yeah.
So you have to explain to us why you didn't come.
Oh, okay, I got it. I looked for a standard review that the committee should use, and I could not find any. However, in looking at state statute or state court, I found that the court discretion should be exercised mindful of the policy of I'm slightly dyslexic, so I'm sorry. The policy of preference to bring about trial on the merits of a disputed matter whenever possible and secure for the litigant his day in court. Therefore, although dismissal of an action is not an abuse of discretion, where a policy shows deliberate, contumacious, and or unwarranted disregard for the court's authority, the court should be reluctant to employ sanction of dismissal except as last resort. And that was in Ridgway versus Mount Vernon Fire Insurance.
So, Mr. Lindquist, that's a good principle. Why didn't you show up?
I received a notice, and this notice was dated 1/28, which was a Friday or Saturday. It was 3 days before the meeting was scheduled. Now, Now, it says that they missed this while you were out. Well, I was not out, but they put the notice in the mailbox. Now, I have some physical difficulties, and I've fallen three times, once on a staircase. And so I don't go out to my mailbox every day. And this was in the mailbox just 3 days before the hearing, three working days before the hearing, and I didn't go out until a couple of days later. I was afraid of going down my front steps, and I didn't go out. I would point out to the committee that I, as a member of the American Association of Academic Professionals and a chair of their committee A, I have appeared before the Freedom of Information Commission on multiple occasions in the past. And offhand, I can think of at least seven times I have appeared when I was told to appear. I was informed about the prior appearance to the current episode, and I appeared there. And unfortunately, I was not given, and I did not ask for when the next hearing would be, as I have been accustomed to in the past. So I just didn't do it. Now,
so, sir,
this was the second notice. Now, looking at the post office transcript, there was a first notice. Now, I would never ignore it. And now I have two addresses that I get mailed to on my street, 1047 and 1595. Now, I currently live at 1595 because of the accommodates my physical problems better than the other. Now, I went down there to look at it, and actually there was nothing in my mailbox there. And apparently they're not delivering anything there anymore.
So, sir, if you were given another opportunity and you were sent notice of a hearing, how would we know that you would show up if you're not getting your mail every 3 or 4 days?
Okay, because I'm sorry, you didn't swear me under oath. I'm telling you now that I will be physically checking the mailbox every day. And if I don't show up, you can throw me out and I will not appeal. I will, in addition to checking my mailbox every day, I will make phone calls to the commission office here, which has been very accommodating to me in the past, to check on if I've been scheduled. So I can assure you that there's no way versus a heart attack or an automobile accident on my way here, there's no way that I will miss another opportunity to have my case heard.
Okay. Counsel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Respondents appeared as per the notice with a witness. A witness with substantial duties at the University of Connecticut Health Center. We don't really see the need to repeat that process, given that sounds like notice was actually mailed to the complainant. Apparently every other notice has arrived successfully because he did claim that he shows up all the other times. And I do know that personally because Dr. Lindquist and I are friends when it comes to the FOI process. And so I'm just curious why this notice didn't arrive or why there was no follow-up once it was discovered, because there was a significant period of time from when
hearing officer McGee issued the proposed decision in late February, obviously until now. So there was apparently no follow-up with the commission to try to recover or to ask questions or anything like that. So, of course, respondent urges adoption of the report as written. I will note, just for the record, I attempted to, at the hearing itself, anticipating that this may have been an issue now today, to put some minute amount of evidence on the record, realizing, of course, that it wasn't subject to cross-examination, but from Dr. Simon, who's the plan administrator, and I don't want to go to the merits too much, Mr. Chairman, but basically that the meeting that Dr. Lindquist believes he was denied access to because he was discussed at the meeting. Our witness was prepared to say that Dr. Lindquist was absolutely not discussed at the meeting. So I don't even really know why there's a sort of a controversy here, and that's what Dr. Simon was prepared to testify to. If the commission decides to redo this, we'll have him testify to that at the time. But it seems like quite a use of resources, given that we've already gone through this process, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I don't know what the other commissioners' thoughts are, but if we had the hearing again, could the witness testify by WebEx or by Zoom or something?
No, presently we're not doing that.
We're not allowing that.
No.
So the witness would have to come.
Potentially, unless the hearing officer thought an affidavit was sufficient. I don't know how much evidence was taken. Perhaps she feels she has enough, or she wants to allow Mr. Lindquist to cross-examine. I will just point out this case is really, really old. You'll see it's from 2020 and pandemic, filed during the pandemic. And Mr. Lindquist had asked us to hold off scheduling it until we could convene in person. So it took a long time for that. And then you'll see there was a convening in person back in October. Mr. Lindquist did appear, as he indicated. But he asked that it be, he said he wasn't prepared to go forward. So that's why we had the hearing scheduled for the 31st, the one at which he failed to appear. So just giving you that little bit of background here. But it's a very, very old case, so we'll want to move it along.
I would move that we direct staff to reschedule it one last time.
I'd be against it. The reason why, it's three scheduled dates for a hearing, two in-person hearings. A year and a half after the first in-person hearing, they wanted it post. He was not ready. The complainant was not ready to proceed a year and a half later. And from what the respondent's counsel is saying, it's a tiny pinprick of an issue, whether or not somebody's there. And if the complainant can't believe that, nothing is going to work on that other than an actual decision, but still it's going to be a tremendous waste of resources. Third time, the respondent's witness did show up, and also the complainant did receive actual notice of a hearing, enough to alert him to call up, because he's a sophisticated complainant in FOI matters. And this is not dismissing the matter with prejudice. Get back in line, and if he still wants to proceed, and just play the ball where it plays.
I just have one question for you, Mr. Lindquist. Mr. Lindquist, if the other side gave you an affidavit from the witness that they had stating that your name wasn't mentioned at the meeting, would that be sufficient for you?
Sufficient in what?
You wouldn't have an opportunity to cross-examine, but you'd have the affidavit from their witness that said your name wasn't mentioned at the meeting.
I don't think.
Okay.
No. What I said was, I've been before you, I think seven or eight times in the last 20 years, and I've always gotten a date for the next meeting if it was held. And what I was saying is that when we last met in person here, the attorney was present that the other person was not.
I was here.
Huh?
I was here.
You, right. You were the only one there other than me at the meeting.
That's correct.
And that's when it was extended, and I usually get a notice when I'm at the meeting that, oh, the next meeting will be at such and such
right.
date.
But my question to you is, if his witness gives you an affidavit stating you weren't at the meeting or that your name wasn't discussed at the meeting, would that be sufficient for you? Is that enough?
I'm sorry. I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand.
Can you explain?
If Rich Simon provided you with a document where he swore that it was true.
What was true?
What the document said.
What document?
That he represented that your name was not brought up at the meeting in question. Would that be sufficient for you? Because we would absolutely be willing to provide that, Mr. Chairman.
But Dr. Stein was not at the meeting. You were the only one there.
No. At the actual meeting that you're concerned about, where you said that your name was brought up and you wanted access to that meeting. Not the FOI meeting, Dr. Lindquist. The meeting from 2020 or 2019. Whatever your complaint said, Dr. Lindquist. This 2020, May 28th, 2020, you said that you were discussed at a meeting. You wanted access. That's the whole basis of your complaint.
I'm sorry. The meeting I'm talking about was the last one we had together.
Right, but the chairman's asking if we can provide you with a sworn statement from Rich Simon that says that you weren't discussed at the meeting in 2020 that you wanted access to.
No.
Would that resolve it for you?
Am
I saying it correctly, Mr. Chairman?
I mean, we were not. I just don't see the relevance of it, but hey, that's me.
He says you're asking whether your name was discussed at a meeting in 2020.
No, I'm sorry. No.
Okay,
no,
that's fine.
I'm sorry.
I was trying to help you resolve it. That's okay. No problem. Do you have anything to say in terms of...
No, I concur with Commissioner Hankins. I mean, even with what Commissioner Hankins says, if he had received it prior to January 31st, which was a Tuesday, even on the Monday or Tuesday, if he had called the commission or something to at least let them know that he would not be, then that would have saved the respondents from, you know, attending the hearing that he failed to appear at.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, for just 10 seconds.
Yes.
If the commission were to adopt the hearing officer report, but with a caveat that we provide the affidavit. I don't even know if there's that's sort of an unorthodox solution, but I would happily provide the affidavit. It's not a big deal to do
that.
We're
not finding a violation, so there's no order, so.
Right.
Well, there's a motion, but there was no second.
I want to accommodate the Dr. Lindquist, but at the same time, it's a big use of resources for the health center.
You indicated that some testimony was offered at the hearing, is that right? Did Dr. Simon testify?
Yes, ma'am.
Was he sworn in?
I honestly can't remember if he was sworn in, but
my thought is that there may be evidence already, possibly under oath, to that effect, that already indicates that.
Is the hearing officer here?
No, she is not.
Well, there was a motion, but
I'll withdraw my motion.
Motion's withdrawn.
I'll make a motion to uphold the Attorney McGee's hearing report.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? All right. Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. So we upheld the decision, sir. You'll have to file again. Okay.
30 or 45 days to file an appeal with the Superior Court.
You'll have to look that one up. I can't give you a legal advice.
Okay.
But yeah.
Thank you.
It's easier probably to just file a request again.
That's without prejudice, right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2022-0161, Cliff Brown versus Chief Police Department. City of Bridgeport Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Counsel, identify themselves, please.
Good afternoon. Evan Parzik, counsel for the complainant, Cliff Brown.
Thank you.
Dina Scalo, Office of the City Attorney, and I'm counsel for all respondents.
Would you like to begin, Attorney Scalo?
Sure. So, in short, the respondents disagree with a number of the findings made by the hearing officer in this proposed final decision, but the reason for them is largely the same. They can really all be boiled down to the fact that the findings are against the weight of the evidence that's in the record. And for a number of these findings, some of the evidence that the respondents put forth at the second hearing in particular, it's not even referenced in the proposed final decision and appears to not even have been taken into account in the evaluation as to whether the exemptions applied or whether the promptness provisions were violated. So I'll discuss them each in turn, or the ones that we think are most significant. These matters were discussed a little bit more thoroughly in the brief that was submitted for the commission's consideration, which contains a number of citations to the specific evidence in the hearing. So I'll just sort of go through a summation of the issues, and I'll be available to answer any specific questions. So as was discussed, the matter surrounds a request for records concerning a homicide in which the complainant, Mr. Brown, who was arrested and convicted. Responsive records were indeed located and provided to Attorney Parzik. Notwithstanding the fact that at the time the complaint was filed with the commission, the chief allegation in the complaint was a matter of promptness, and that since no records had been provided at the time of the complaint, the promptness provisions of the act had been violated. Despite the fact that records had inevitably been produced at the hearing or prior to the hearing, slightly before, Attorney Parzik on behalf of Mr. Brown contested a number of the redactions and claimed exemptions. And so over the objections of counsel, the records were submitted for an in-camera inspection. We held another hearing talking about the merits of the exemptions that were claimed. As noted in my brief, at the first hearing, I had appeared, since I was the one who conducted the legal review of the records, I appeared fully expecting to be put under oath and to provide my testimony regarding the redactions. The hearing officer, and my recollection was that Attorney Parzik also anticipated testifying as well, but I could be wrong. The hearing officer, in a discussion on and off the record, said that she did not wish to swear me in because I was counsel of record. This is inconsistent with the way previous matters had been held before the commission involving myself and my observations with others. So essentially, the respondents were precluded from presenting evidence from the individual who conducted the legal review. And this is a little bit of a difficult case because the case file involved an investigation from, I believe, over 20 years ago in the year 2000. So the institutional knowledge is really quite sparse in terms of people who worked on the case who are still with the police department. But in any event, the hearing was continued, and at the second hearing, the respondents presented three witnesses. Two record keepers from the Bridgeport Police Department, one of whom was a detective who has worked in the Detective Bureau and conducting investigations, and a paralegal from the Office of the City Attorney. The city produced a lot of evidence with respect to the nature of the records, the search for the records, the processing of the request, the exemptions, and again, a lot of this evidence was not even referenced in the proposed final decision. And what we take probably greatest issue with is the findings in paragraphs 30 and 31, which find that materials claimed as exempt pursuant to 1210b3a, that the respondents did not meet their burden for proving the applicability of the exemptions. And I'd like to discuss a little bit why. As is discussed, more in depth in the brief, B3A, I'm sure as the commissioners know, requires the proving of two factual prongs. Number one, that the witness or, you know, the identifiable information is not otherwise known. And number two, if it was made known, that that witness could be subject to harm or harassment or intimidation. As for the first prong, both the counsel for the complainant and Attorney Parzik had provided the respondents with unredacted records and materials concerning the trial, the underlying criminal trial, which again, the Office of the City Attorney, the police department, testified to do not have routine access to these criminal trial records. So based on that information and reliance upon that information, the respondents did not claim a number of witness names as exempt from disclosure under B3A because we had proof that they were known, they were made public during the trial. At the very least, they were known to Attorney Parzyk. However, there were materials that remained redacted because based on the information that had been provided, essentially there had been a cross-reference, the material that was not contained in the information provided by counsel as proof essentially that people were known to the public remained redacted because we had really a rebuttable presumption that if the information had not been presented to us to suggest that they were public, that really the only possible conclusion is that their information is not public. Attorney Parzyk didn't know who they were, and if he did, he would have presumably produced that information to us. Additionally, the city provided testimony from the paralegal in the city attorney's office who attested to this kind of cross-referencing to ensure that the material that was redacted had not been produced by Attorney Parzyk previously. So again, it's important to note that the standard of proof for administrative hearings with respect to proving exemptions is the preponderance of the evidence. It's not like a criminal trial where you need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Essentially, colloquially, it's more likely than not. Is it more likely than not that a fact is or is not the case? And given this information, given the fact that Attorney Parzyk produced this information to the city and the city deduced, reasonably so, that the information not contained in that information is not otherwise known, it's certainly well beyond more likely than not that those individuals are not otherwise known or other identifiers. With respect to proving the prong regarding harm, the city produced significant evidence at the second hearing from a sergeant who again had worked as a detective. He had not worked as a detective on this case, but had an opportunity to review the records and could speak to his to the practice in terms of how the Detective Bureau conducts its investigations and the type of material that's produced. This is laid out way more detail on my, I think, on page 13 of my brief. But Sergeant Segrist testified that generally there's an understanding that if witness information is disclosed improperly, that they could be subject to harm. But specifically with regard to this file that was requested, since it's a homicide file, that risk is much more likely and much more intense given the violence of the underlying crime that's alleged here or that was proved that resulted in a conviction. There's a greater influence risk, a greater risk of harm to the witnesses. Sergeant Seekers confirmed in his testimony that this risk is still apparent even if a bit more vague information concerning a witness has been produced. So an address rather than a name. An address is still problematic because you can trace back who that individual may or may not be. And again, as noted in the brief, the commission is certainly at liberty to take administrative notice of reporting, specifically in the city of Bridgeport, but certainly throughout the state, where there is demonstrable proof that if unknown witnesses, if that information is made publicly available, that they could be subject to harm, harassment, or in some cases, they could even be killed if their information has been produced without proper protections. In fact, the city cites in their brief the fact that Section 54-82S of the Connecticut General Statutes was named the Leroy Brown Jr. and Karen Clark Witness Protection Program in recognition of witnesses in the city of Bridgeport who were murdered when their identities were made known to the perpetrator. The evidence in the record, specifically with respect to the records that are at issue and more generally in terms of the Detective Bureau and the Bridgeport Police Department, has proved that it is far more likely than not that if these individuals, who again, it's been proved that more likely than not, they're not known to members of the public, if their identifiers are made known, that they could be subject to harm or intimidation. So that, in terms of what has been presented in the proposed final decision, which just talks sort of generally about the records custodian testifying as to general information and that they presume witnesses will be subject to threat or harm or intimidation, while that is true, the evidence presented at the hearing goes well beyond that and certainly meets the evidentiary threshold to prove the applicability of that exemption in particular. And then briefly, I'd just like to touch on the promptness findings, which I believe are towards the end in paragraph 45 and 46. The hearing officer mentioned some evidence in the record. In the brief, we talk a little bit more about the fact that counsel, in submitting his request, did not include his client's name in the request. and there was evidence at the hearing demonstrating that that impeded the ability to search for the record and to eventually locate the record. And it was, I believe, the testimony was after that name, the name of Cliff Brown, had been produced to the Bridgeport Police Department, despite their research to try to determine more information about the underlying case. The file was found not long after that. The Superior Court has found that the requester's sort of failure to provide evidence that will, or to provide information that will facilitate a search, is information that the Freedom of Information Commission can rely on when determining whether a response to a request is prompt. That's McCoy v. Freedom of Information Commission. So it's referenced in the proposed final decision, but it doesn't really take into account the significant impact that it had on actually locating the file. And in addition, there was a lot of information and testimony produced at the hearing from the paralegal from the city attorney's office talking about all the other factors that can be considered under Advisory Opinion 51. So the volume of records, well over 500 pages of records, I believe. The amount of time it will take to conduct a meticulous review of those records, the number of other requests that require processing, the staffing issues. None of that information is really reflected in the proposed final decision. So essentially, counsel had argued at the hearing that the city could have contacted him to obtain this additional information. While that's certainly true, Freedom of Information Commission precedent doesn't require that the city engage in negotiation. There's a finding specifically that the promptness requirement does not include the right to engage with a requester or negotiate a request that's open. And so an agency is required to conduct a search based on the information that it has. And based on the information that was presented, a diligent search was conducted on numerous occasions, the testimony showed. So we would argue that the evidence does not point to a violation of the promptness provision in this case. So essentially, that really, I think, summarizes a number of the points that the city would like to make. It's the city's position that factual findings as to the redactions is improper in this case anyway, because in the initial complaint that was filed, it was a matter of promptness and non-production of records. And this body itself dismissed a similar case in June of 2022 in the matter of David Marquetos v. Town Planner, Senior Enforcement Officer, Town of New Canaan, et al., which was a similar fact pattern. It was a requester who put in a complaint because he hadn't received his records, alleging a promptness violation. The hearing officer elected to make findings of fact as to the propriety of claimed exemptions, and this body elected not to take any action on that case because it exceeded the scope of the initial complaint. So this is an argument that the respondents have made in a number of different cases. We would argue it applies here. But in any event, we would mainly argue that the findings of fact are contrary to the evidence in the record, and we would ask that the matter be reversed and that the actions of the respondents be confirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Yeah, I don't know where to begin. Attorney Scalo is rehashing issues that we brought up at three hearings and in significant post-hearing briefing. To say that the hearing officer did not consider the evidence is frankly astounding. A lot of the testimony is clearly referenced in the hearing report. The complaint, which was submitted almost a year ago, and we're now, Friday will be 2 years since the original request was submitted to the respondents, have not received an opportunity to review the material. I still have not had an opportunity to review the material. Counsel is correct that Bridgeport has disclosed some materials. They've withheld more than 300 pages of materials. It's frankly shocking. And as this commission is well aware, this is not Bridgeport's first time here. Regarding Attorney Scalo claiming that she was somehow precluded from being a witness, this is her first time bringing that issue up. I've never heard that before. Another attorney with the city attorney's office very easily could have filed an appearance in the case in lieu of Attorney Scalo's and called her to the stand. You know, if Attorney Scalo has information that needs to be provided under oath, okay, become a witness. Come here and get sworn in. They didn't do that, and now she's trying to say for the first time here, after we had three hearings, after we briefed, after hearing Officer McGee put out a well-reasoned decision, that this is some issue. And furthermore, Attorney Scalo did put on a paralegal to try to testify to these issues. Regarding redactions and exemptions under B3A, There was no evidence provided. Sergeant Seeger has testified for about 20 minutes. There was no evidence that any witness in this case, known or otherwise, would face any threat, any harm, any intimidation, anything like that. Sergeant Seacrest himself admitted on cross-examination, I asked something to the extent of, do these concerns exist in a closed case? Sergeant Seacrest, no. This is a closed case. It's been closed for more than 20 years. Obviously, there are issues with witness intimidation, things like that, people trying to influence testimony, people trying to get at witnesses. This is not that case. These people have testified. They've testified more than 20 years ago. People have talked to the police more than 20 years ago. Furthermore, we're not trying to change anyone's testimony. We're not trying to influence testimony. We're not trying to get to anyone. We're trying to figure out what people told police. We represent this complainant in a habeas action alleging actual innocence. We're looking for information that may be exculpatory. Maybe it's there, maybe it's not. I don't know. But under the statute, under the act, we have a right to know what's there. And the respondents provided zero proof, none, that any witness in this case, known or otherwise, would face any sort of harm or intimidation. And frankly, to suggest that they would is shocking. Regarding the promptness requirement, I am really floored by Bridgeport claiming that the name of the arrestee wasn't provided and this somehow impeded their search. I can represent to this body, I filed dozens of requests with dozens of other agencies, police departments, et cetera, never had a problem with the name of the arrestee. Now, with further requests with Bridgeport, I do, because apparently this will help their search. This is clearly an excuse for their complete inability to locate records and their chaotic records management. And just to speak to that, I filed this complaint more than a year after the original request. At that point, there was no evidence, as hearing officer McGee noted, there was no evidence that anyone had undertaken any sort of search of the records more than a year later. So to say that, well, he didn't provide the name of the arrestee is just clearly an excuse, clearly an absurd reason. I also reached out multiple times to offer my help. Is there anything I can do to help you find these records? Is there any information I can provide? I offered to go to Bridgeport personally to review the records in person if that would make it easier. Crickets, nothing. I think hearing officer McGee's report is well-reasoned. She clearly references the evidence, references the testimony, to somehow allege that she, you know, didn't fully consider the evidence. You know, I was here three times with hearing officer McGee. She was very interested in this case, asked us thorough questions. I'd ask that the commission adopt the hearing officer reports, hearing officer's report in full.
Thank you. Any commissioners have anything to say?
I do.
I think Attorney Scala mentioned that this report is largely based on weighing of the evidence, so I'm not going to substitute my judgment for that of hearing officer McGee.
I don't know if I can ask this, but just so I know that I don't have a conflict, can we have the name of the arrestee?
Cliff Brown.
Oh, it is Mr. Brown. Okay, I thought. Yes. All right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
What are the odds, huh?
All right. Anything further? And entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Strieger, I move adoption of the hearing officer.
Commissioner Hankett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2022-0169, Jermaine Rogers versus Office of City Attorney, City of Bridgeport, et al. Identify yourself for the record, sir.
Jermaine Rogers.
Thank you, counsel.
Dina Scalo, Office of the City Attorney, and I'm counsel for the respondents.
Thank you. Would you like to begin, Attorney Scalo?
Yes, please. Essentially, the city agrees with a number of the findings of the hearing officer in this case. We agree with her findings regarding jurisdiction as to two out of the three requests that are currently at issue. We agree with her findings regarding the number, the breadth of records that were produced, the nature of the review, and the fact that given the staffing concerns, given the volume of records, given the communication between the parties, that there was no undue delay on the part of the respondents. We certainly agree with that proposition. We do have an issue with respect to the findings that material that had been redacted from responsive body camera footage in particular, with respect to audible radio communications, communications between the dispatch center and the police, would not be exempt from disclosure pursuant to 1210B3E. It's the city's position that that's pretty self-explanatory, self-evidentiary material that relates specifically to the investigation and detection of crime and techniques that are not otherwise known to members of the public. It is worth pointing out that there was no in-camera inspection that was completed with this matter. So essentially, there was really no analysis in terms of listening to the material and seeing what the merits of redactions were. Again, with some material, such as with NCIC material that's available over the radio, there's consistent court decisions, Freedom of Information Commission's decisions that support the findings in that regard. But we would offer that the findings with respect to the 1210B3E redactions are a bit more nuanced, and listening to them would perhaps have resulted in a different decision in this case. We agree with the hearing officer's findings that non-responsive material didn't need to be disclosed in this case. And should the commission agree to adopt the hearing officer's proposed final decision as written, the 1 month period is certainly a reasonable time frame. It will require essentially redaction of the audio and video, which may prove difficult, but hopefully within a month that we are able to meet that deadline. But that's the city's position with respect to the 1210B3E material in particular. And I'm certainly glad to answer any questions that commissioners might have.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. As you all know, I'm not an attorney. I'm a regular citizen. I'm a disabled person. And I've been trying to get this information for almost 3 years. Attorney Scallo gave me one disc at our first meeting. So when I first came here to our first meeting, this is what I received from Attorney Scallo. There's no sound on it. It's from the fourth responding officer. The hearing officer told her, that's insufficient. You need to come back and have more information. Now, the information that Attorney Scallo presented to me is all right here. In the internal affairs report and about one of the police officers I'm referring to, his body cam is nowhere on this information. He doesn't exist on this disc. So for the attorney to say that they turned over everything and to constantly come up with excuses, the commission is already aware of the attitude of Bridgeport, the attitude of the attorney's office, and what they do to citizens. There's almost 1,800 other people going through this quagmire. I am not an attorney. I try my best to get the information from the city attorneys and from Bridgeport Police. All I've got was stonewall. All I got was excuses. All I received was this, that. It's always something that's not going good with them that holds everyone else up. I don't understand it. It's ridiculous. I have a letter here from a city council member that went and talked to Attorney Scallo before her boss, Mr. Myers, retired. That was months before we even came to the first meeting. So for her to say that they didn't have enough time and things of that nature, I'm dumbfounded at that. Again, I'm a disabled person, and the records will show, and the things that she tried to redact will show the attitude and the arrogance of certain Bridgeport police officers when they're dealing with people and certainly minorities. This is totally outrageous. I can't believe that I have to go through all of this just to get information from the city, from the attorneys. Again, I submitted it to the FOI commission. Every time I try to bring it up, they were like, oh, we reject that. We reject that. We don't want that information being put in. But I did give it to the commission, so there should be a copy of it. And it states, my name is Councilmember George Cruz of the 131st District in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Please allow me to tell you that I've known Mr. Rogers for 11 years and know him to be an upfront, honest man. Around February of 2020, Mr. Rogers brought to my attention of the hassle he's been having with getting a copy of the video concerning his unjustified arrest and treatment by the Bridgeport Police Department. Mr. Rogers asked me if I can help with his unfortunate situation that has taken a toll on his personal life. Of course, I said I would do my best to help him. I personally contacted Chief City Attorney Christopher Myers and requested his help in this matter. In May of this year, which was last year, 2022, I personally had a meeting with Chief City Attorney Myers at one of his offices at Margaret Morris Center, where his office is located. Attorney Myers included a new attorney that was recently hired. I told Attorney Myers that I am not happy with how Mr. Rogers is being mistreated by the police department, not giving him a copy of the police video. Attorney Myers instructed the new attorney to contact the police department to help obtain a copy of the video from Mr. Rogers. Now we are in June 2022 and still Mr. Rogers or myself have not received a response or a copy of the video. It is frustrating and unfair for Mr. Rogers to continue to suffer at the hands of the so-called caring professionals who took an oath to protect and serve our Constitution. Unfortunately, they have betrayed the Constitution and neglected to serve Mr. Rogers. Thank you. George Cruz, City Council Member, City Councilman, 131st District, signed and dated 9/11/2022. I disagree with the hearing officer's I disagree with her saying that the time that they took was okay. 3 years, almost 3 years, that's okay. She said, again, I'm not a lawyer or whatever, but she said I didn't appeal the first two. I didn't know. First of all, a lot of people don't even know about FOI, the Freedom of Information Act. They don't even know the commission can step in. They don't even know all these things are available when municipalities take over and or try to control the citizens of the city. Almost 2,000 people are still waiting. Every time I come here, every time I look in the paper, every time I hear someone else, it's always an excuse by the city attorney's office. It makes no sense. It really doesn't.
Sir, for the record, there were two items that you had with you.
Yes, sir.
Can you just identify them first?
Item one is, this is the first disc that I received from Attorney Scallo when I first came to our first meeting here.
Okay.
And then, so I didn't receive any information until I came to the meeting here.
So that was a disc of information.
Correct. This is a disc that there's no sound on. It's it's very blurry, everything else. The commission, the
and then there was another item. I just want to know.
Yes. The other item is a flash drive, which I had to find a computer to put it in and everything else. And on this flash drive, okay, there's a whole police officer missing. His name is Sergeant Ian Schumacher, Shoemaker. He's nowhere on here, but he's on the internal affairs report, and it says his conduct was, I'll read it to you. Sergeant Ian Schumacher, police conduct.
Can I ask, was this part of the record?
Yes, it was.
Barbara Housen, for the record, I was a hearing officer. Some of this is not on the record, like that statement that Mr. Rogers read prior to this.
Okay. This
that you are, oh, that was.
This is on the
this
record.
A part of the record.
I just wanted you to identify the exhibits in case someone filed an appeal so that we knew what they were.
Yes, this is the Office of Internal Affairs. The Internal Affairs investigation was over on August 17, 2021. The officer who did the case said it shouldn't take them more than 3 weeks to get you all the information you need to proceed with your doctors and if you want to take legal action. 3 weeks, 2021, August 17, 2021. We're now here in 2023. It states Sergeant Don Topolowski illegal search and seizure where the investigation determined by preponderance of evidence that the person's allegations is supported by sufficient evidence to determine that the incident occurred and the actions of the officers were improper. It states for Sergeant Ian Schumacher, police conduct sustained where the investigation determines by preponderance of evidence that the police allegations is supported by sufficient evidence to determine that the incident occurred and the actions of the police officer were improper. If the city attorney sees this and knows the actions of the police officers were improper, why must I wait 3 years to get the information?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Apparently, in this matter, two out of three cases, Attorney Housen, were no subject matter jurisdiction, correct?
Untimely.
Right.
Yes, and so that, in terms of the complainant indicating that he's been waiting a number of years, the first two requests were much earlier. So the third request really started the clock, the March request, when the commission had jurisdiction. And so we had the hearing, the first hearing in September, and I believe the second hearing a month after that. And so looking at the promptness issue between the request, the volume of the record, you know, all of that, I really had to discount the first two requests.
Yes, you know that no undue delay given the circumstances in paragraph 54 of your hearing.
In terms of the request over which we had jurisdiction, the right. March request.
Okay. What does that mean? She had, like, I'm not a lawyer, so.
Any first comment?
No.
No, thank you.
Sir, you wanted to ask a question?
Yes. What does she mean by jurisdiction? Because I didn't sign something, or I don't understand. I filled out the request. Mm-hmm. I went through the city's portal. I did everything I was supposed to do.
So your complaint to the commission, as is indicated in the report, you made three requests to Bridgeport. And the first two requests, the commission does not have the authority to go back and review those requests and make a determination of whether the city violated the law or not, because the window of time between when you made your first two requests and you filed a complaint was too late. So those two requests, the commission does not have the authority by law to deal with that. So, but fortunately for you, your third request filed based on your March request, the commission had jurisdiction. And so you were able, the commission was able to hear and review that records request. And so many of the findings are in favor of the complainant. So that's really it. I'm not sure if you are following that.
Yes,
yeah,
I am.
Yeah.
I entertain a motion.
Chairman, Mr. Street, I'll move it up to the hearing.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll take a roll call. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
So what does that mean?
Decision was in your favor.
You should be getting the records if you don't.
You should be getting, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0174, Holly Nugent versus Chief Police Department, Town of Guilford, et al.
Good afternoon. Mark Samaruga from Pullman and Conley for the complainant to Polly Nugent.
Thank you, Attorney Samaruga.
Talking with me from Sussman Duffy Singoff on behalf of the respondents and government department.
Attorney McQueen, would you like to begin?
I just really, very briefly, we accept the draft report. I think that we also, sort of our position has been that this interpretation in the new report should apply to the second action that's pending with that has the body camera request. and that they're, we're prepared to sort of turn those records over immediately after they have, after we get the new report.
I have nothing further to say than I think the commission should adopt this decision. We've met, this is the third time. Anything, I really can't say anything more than I've already not said from the previous two times. And I appreciate the decision. So.
Thank you.
You don't want to wait a few more hours, you know?
If we're only the second to the last time, pardon this time, which is better than the first two. The luck of the draw. Seriously, thank you.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Just one quick comment. I just want to say, this was a razor's edge.
Yes, we
know. All of us seeing the in-camera records, there was a balance there, and I think that in the end, I think this hopefully will be the last of it. So, my best to both of you. You put on good arguments in the previous time. So
we appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
I'll move adoption of the hearing officer.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? I'll just say that you both were excellent. It was a good argument. It was something that was interesting to all of us.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Alan Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0199, Dina Borchard versus Andreas Vizpikos, First Selectman, Town of Colchester, et al. Yeah. The parties identify themselves, please.
Deanna Borchard, complainant.
Thank you.
And Attorney Julie Jakey on behalf of the respondents.
Thank you. Ms. Borchard, would you like to begin?
Sure. On April 29th, I sent a email to the town of Colchester requesting to inspect ARPA applications. ARPA applications were part of a $4.7 million grant that was sent out to the town of Colchester, and the town of Colchester has sought ARPA applications from area businesses to send in their applications. One of the issues that had come up was that there were three members of the ARPA committee that were rumored to have submitted their own applications. In order for me to be able to assert that that actually had happened, I requested through the town of Colchester the opportunity to inspect the ARPA applications. I sent an email out on a Friday, letting them know that I would be coming into the office to inspect the records. On the following Monday, May 2nd, I called the office of the First Selectman. I spoke to his administrative assistant. It was about 12:30 in the afternoon, and I told her to follow up the email that I would be coming into the office to inspect the ARPA applications. The administrative assistant gave me no indication that the ARPA applications weren't available. They weren't accessible. She said, okay. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, I proceeded and went to the town of Colchester town hall in the First Selectman's office suite and requested the records. The First Selectman's administrative assistant said that she did not know where the records were. I was in the company of a witness by the name of Rachel Fuller. She was a prior clerk in the office and actually had trained Ms. Brown. And she reiterated to her that there were ARPA applications on a digital drive that is something that they use in the office of the First Selectman. Ms. Brown proceeded to go back to her desk, into her office. Subsequently, another person came into the office who happened to be the clerk of the prior First Selectman. And when she asked what was taking place, we told her she had gone to the First Selectman's office, I think to drop off some kind of correspondence, came back out. When Ms. Brown returned, that clerk also told Ms. Brown, we can help you. Everything that comes into the office is scanned in the office of the First Selectman. It's on a digital drive. Ms. Brown returned to her computer, came back subsequently and said she couldn't help me. And I asked her if she was denying my right to inspect records under Connecticut FOIA. The
hearing, when we went to the hearing, the respondents contended that she was new to her job. She had only been on the job a few days. That's actually incorrect. She was the prior clerk. She had been employed since February 28th. She had used the digital drive. I brought a witness who was the prior executive assistant who testified that she trained Ms. Brown where everything was in the office. They had to train like cross-training, because there's only a two-person office. So she was cross-trained on both how to find ARPA applications as well as how to process Freedom of Information requests. When I went to the office, I was expecting to receive and to be able to inspect some of the ARPA applications. Ms. Brown said she was working on some. She then said some she didn't have access to, and then some were on the digital drive. She offered none. I think in the respondent's case, they reference Corvo, in which somebody asked for records. And the commission found against the respondent. However, in that case, when the person went in, the office provided all that they had in the office and then made arrangements for that person to come back the following day. The person never came back the following day, so the commission found against him. In my case, I followed up with the first selectman. The first selectman responded at 3:33 with an email to say, make an appointment with my administrative assistant to come back. I called back the office. I followed up with a subsequent email to him later on this afternoon. I followed up with communications with Ms. Brown. While Ms. Brown was here on cross-examination, I asked her why she didn't respond to any of my follow-up. You told me to come back in. I'm calling and leaving messages. You didn't respond. She said she was out of the office for the rest of the day. That's her rest of the week. That was her testimony. The reason that I gave to Ms. Brown that I wanted to inspect the applications that day is because there was a Board of Finance meeting that night in which they were going to discuss the assessment process on handing out $1 million to businesses. As a taxpaying citizen, it was a concern to me that three members of this committee had actually put in applications. I couldn't confirm that, right? It was just speculative at that point until I was able to then review these applications. I submitted for evidence the Connecticut Mirror. Andrew Brown had followed up on the story. Apparently this was happening across the state, that there was some improprieties in how the ARPA application process or the ARPA funds were being distributed. The respondents stated that they created a digital Google Drive that was created on 5/16. One of the reasons that they said that they were prompt was that they put this digital drive online for me that same night. There is evidence that I submitted that digital drive did not work. I tried to get on. I sent the first selectman and CC'd the administrative assistant, said, you're providing me with these digital records, but they're not working. They then contend that there was an IT problem. The issue with that is the IT problem just didn't happen then. It had been ongoing for almost 2 months. ARP applications have been coming into the first selectman's office since November. I met with the first selectman in April with the consultants that were paid. I raised my concerns then. I submitted evidence of a text message that he said that it would be completed on 4/15. Everything would be up online. It was not. May 2nd, when I went into that office, if she had said, when I called at 12:30, can you give me a couple hours? They're not available. Can we reschedule? Give me a couple hours. She said nothing. She said, sure, come on in. So when I got there, then she told me they weren't available. She's given three excuses as to why I couldn't get the records. First was she didn't know where they were, despite having testified that she actually had physical copies in her office. The second were that they were in an office that she was told she couldn't access. The third was that the printer in the first selectman's office is kind of slow, so she couldn't print out applications. They maintain that there's between 100 and 150, they don't even know the count of the actual applications that were submitted. It's kind of been an ongoing issue in the town of Colchester. And when I asked her what she did to prepare, when I called you at 12:30, why didn't you say anything to me? And then she said, I don't know. I said, well, what did you do to prepare for me coming in? I sent the email on Friday. You knew I was coming. I gave you a courtesy call, which is not required under FOIA, right, for an in-person record request. She said, I told the first selectman. So I said, so the first selectman was aware that I was coming in, correct? Yes. And you said that there were records that you were in office that you were told you couldn't go in. Did you tell the first selectman? You could have gotten the records, right? Doesn't FOIA require that records, public records, be accessible to the public so that when we come in, we have the chance to inspect them? There was a time-sensitive matter. There was a meeting that night. I asked for the records. I had been asking for the records. I did my due diligence as a citizen, and the contention of the respondents is, well, they sent you an email link that night. We fulfilled it. We're prompt. Then it was, well, May 16th, there was a digital drive created. They provide no evidence as to what was on the digital drive. They know nothing as to what applications were uploaded at that time. They provide nothing other than it was created. And then, oh, by June 16th, she should have had access. And that's prompt as far as the respondents were concerned. In July, the ombudsman called, and we were trying to figure things out. Ms. Brown sent an email to the ombudsman. She didn't send her the Google Drive. She sent her three different things, none of which contained all of the applications. So I said to the ombudsman, we're still back to square one. I'll proceed with my complaint. I just wanted to point out.
You're at 10 minutes, Ms.
I'm sorry.
You could wrap it up.
Okay. I just one case that I wanted to point to. In the town of administrator of Vernon, town of Vernon respondents, the commission found that the responsibility of responding to FOI requests is being transferred from the former town administrator who had resigned to him, which caused some delay in responding to FOI requests. Nevertheless, based on the facts and circumstances of this case, it is found that the respondent's provision of the requested record describes in paragraph 2 weeks after the initial request was not prompt in the meaning of 1-210. It is the contention of the respondents that the administrative assistant had only been on the job for a few days with her new title. The problem is that she had been there since February. She was cross-trained. My witness showed that she was cross-trained. And they also state in her brief that it was not the job of the clerk in her prior job to produce FOI requests. And that is just not incorrect. That is absolutely false. The job description of the clerk is to process FOI requests as both the clerk and as the administrative assistant. While the administrative assistant is the identified FOI coordinator, it is still the job responsibility of the clerk in the first selectman's office to produce FOI requests.
Thank you, commissioners. So I think that one fact that is important to point out at the outset is in paragraph 15, which states that at the hearing in this matter, the complainant actually admitted at the hearing that she hadn't even reviewed these ARPA applications that she places such importance on before you today. And as of the hearing date in December, so many months after the initial request, she still hadn't gone on to the town website to look at this, that the ARPA applications, which both the executive assistant to the first selectman and the first selectman had told her that they would be available on the town website. The legal standard here is clear, and it's been reiterated in many cases before that's been heard by this commission, that promptly doesn't mean immediately. There are some, you know, facts that were left out of her statement before you. There were over 150 ARPA applications. The deadline had passed for these applications just 3 days prior. And so all of these applications hadn't yet been processed. They were received in person. They were received through the mail. They were received by email. And the executive assistant to the superintendent, to the first selectman, was there herself that day alone. And she did have a new title. And with that new title came responding to FOI requests, which she hadn't done previously. And so at that particular moment in time, you know, she expressed that she was overwhelmed, that all of these applications hadn't yet been processed. And she had, Ms. Bouchard had been asked by both, you know, the first selectman and by the executive assistant to the first selectman to return and to come inspect the record once they've all been processed and the town had been given an opportunity to compile them for her. Instead, you know, Ms. Bouchard never returned. She never made an appointment. She never inspected, requested copies of the records. The town acknowledges there were IT issues. Initially, all the applications were available online through a share file link, and the town was made aware that that wasn't working for people. And so IT basically had to work with the town to put it onto this Google Drive. And everything was on that Google Drive as of June 11th. The initial request was made in this case on May 2nd, and everything was available to the public on the town's website. And those were made as an exhibit in the hearing. And it's clearly stated that, you know, the documents were uploaded by at least June 11th, everything that was responsive to this request. And again, I would just like to point out that as of the hearing date, Ms. Bouchard hadn't even reviewed all of the ARPA applications that were available on the town website. And so based on the standard that promptly doesn't mean immediately, and the town was prompt in this matter, all of the responsive records in this case were made available on the town website just a few weeks after after this initial request was made, you know, the hearing officer reached the right result in this case.
Thank you. I'd like to hear from the hearing officer.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Attorney Zach Hyde, for the record. Do you have any specific questions?
Sure. Attorney Hyde, Ms. Bouchard indicated that she needed these records for a meeting that was that evening. What consideration was given to that?
At the hearing, the complainant did state that she made that known to the administrative assistant. The administrative assistant testified that she did not recollect her saying that. The applications were still being processed. So, you know, I know that she wanted them for that. She states that she wanted them that evening, but I don't think that they were ready to even all be reviewed yet. The administrative assistant was clearly, based on, you know, my weighing of the evidence, was not prepared to provide those records at the time that she was in the office.
Sounds like she had some records on her desk, some in the computer, and some in another place. Why couldn't she have given some of those records?
There were, I believe, three different locations where records were possibly available. One of the locations, for reasons, for certain reasons, she was not allowed to go into that area of the office to get those records. And her testimony that she was simply overwhelmed. And after, you know, trying to get in touch with the first selectman, she suggested that the complainant come back and make an appointment, which was never happened. My recollection is that she was simply overwhelmed at a person coming in and demanding these records. I will also say that the complainant's witness, who trained the administrative assistant in FOI requests, also admitted on the record that she never trained her on processing in-person FOI requests because they so rarely happen. So I took that into consideration as well.
If the meeting was immediate, they had a meeting that evening, and some of those records were available, if you tell her, come back, just schedule an appointment, that doesn't satisfy her need, which is, I need records prior to this meeting. And she made a point that some were available. I don't understand why the question wasn't asked of the witness. You know, I'll call the selectman and I'll get back to you in an hour. I mean, I'm sure the selectman was back in the office later on.
The selectman did email her that same day saying, please make an appointment to come.
make an appointment, meaning another day, not that day.
Again, the witness for the respondents did not recollect her saying that. I know she says that she said that. The complaint says she said that. The respondent's witness does not recollect her saying that.
And so, as a fact finder, you believe the respondents and not the witness?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. So, I guess the hearing officer, I take 180 degree opposite of the chairman's view. I think that, you know, somebody coming in demanding that documents that day when they're still processing, these haven't even been reviewed by town staff. And just because they say they need them for a meeting tonight does not hold any water with me. Maybe it's me being, you know, from the municipal world and being a town administrator myself, being a records access officer for my town, to say that, you know, somebody coming in and just saying that does not mean that you're executive assistant or secretary should drop everything they're doing to give them what they need for a meeting they like, because they have some grudge against three people that maybe may have submitted applications. I know at the time she may have found out, but it sounds like she hasn't looked over the applications. 150 applications coming in does not mean that they've been reviewed by town staff yet. And they're compiling them, trying to scan them in, and I have, you know, maybe I have some sympathy for the complainant, but her arguments just don't hold water. I give kudos to the municipality for doing what they can. And there's, like I said, there's nothing that says that they need to provide these records immediately. She should schedule an appointment, but scheduling an appointment, the buck stops at the select board, the first select, not the executive assistant or whatever her name, her position was, who was a... The critical testimony from what the hearing officer says is that she may not have been properly trained, but she did, you know, at the time, tell her, you know, make an appointment, come back. And it sounds like the communication from the town was above board, and I'd be in favor of supporting the hearing officer's report.
I would concur with Commissioner Streeter. I mean, I don't know what, you know, if there's needed to be anything redacted from these applications, whether or not the applications have social security numbers on them or some private information. You know, there was never any evidence from anybody on that. But to me, paragraphs 14 and 15 are kind of the linchpins of the decision. And that those two paragraphs kind of are it for me and caused me to uphold the hearing officer.
Motion's been made and seconded for the discussion. I'll state after hearing the hearing officer's comments, you know, that he is the fact finder. He did not believe that the statement was made that there was an immediate need for these records. I'm not going to interfere with a fact finder who's got boots on the ground and has listened to both witnesses and has entertained all the evidence. So with that understanding, I will be voting in favor of this. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. Take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0374, John DeLoreal versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Education, and State of Connecticut, Department of Education. The parties please identify themselves for the record.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. John DeLoreal. The second letter is an I, not an L.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
DeOreo,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Assistant Attorney General John Langmaid for the respondents.
Thank you. Just wait for Mr. DeOreo.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your attention and your time today. So we're here to oppose a granted motion to dismiss. The underlying matter here was resolved by the Connecticut Supreme Court in February of 22, very shortly after oral argument in the fall of 21. I made a request to the Department of Banking for specific documents that were found in decision related to case FOIC 19-650, particular finding number 17. We made a conscious decision not to appeal the hearing officer and commission's decision on that case, based upon the clear understanding that once it was fully adjudicated, some of those records would become available. So I know that there have been some allegations about springing this at the last second. That certainly was never my intent. I think in my opening salvo to the department itself, I made it very clear what the position was. And I can't speak for previous filings by Ms. Rubin, but I can speak to her participation in the preparation of this brief and my preparation to argue this today. I think as we simply narrow, I'm perfectly willing to discuss the 36A21 issue if the commissioners please, but I think the question today is much narrower than that. I think it's simply, do we deserve a hearing based upon our assertion that we didn't, in our initial request, we didn't limit our position, it was and is, under 36A21, which does include provision E, which does apply temporal limitations on confidentiality, that those records are no longer protected. And we think that E was ignored in the proposed decision. It wasn't part of the hearing officer's legal analysis at all. As a matter of fact, her decision completely omits E. And we believe that it should be, the motion to dismiss should be rejected and we should be granted a hearing on, I don't want to limit ourselves here. Okay, there are multiple reasons under 36A21 that these documents are no longer protected, and we look forward to having the opportunity to present evidence to a hearing officer and eventually to this commission as necessary to show that they are no longer protected. Thank you.
So just for my edification, was the brief that was emailed to me on Monday, was it actually submitted to the commission for the commission's review? Okay, so you got your copies. The first thing I'll point out about that brief is that the offer of evidence within it is inadmissible. The commission's procedures, 1-21J40, says in no event shall new evidence not submitted into evidence under sections 21J35 to 38 inclusive be submitted to or considered by the commission at the commission meeting at which the proposed final decision is considered. So whatever he's attached there as evidence is not was improperly offered and shouldn't be considered. In any event, the FIC 2022-374, the entire record of the proceedings makes no mention of 36A21E until the submission of that brief. The request for records didn't mention 36A21E. The complaint to the commission didn't mention 36A21E. Both referenced a completely different subsection of that statute. And we filed a motion to dismiss without hearing because the basis of the complaint stated by the complainant was without merit as a matter of law. And we filed a motion to that effect. The complainant filed a response to that, and the response made no mention of 36A21E. And then we filed a reply addressing the points that the complainant made in his objection to our motion. So what we have here is the most clear case of sandbagging that I have come across in my practice.
Wait till you're a little older.
Okay. So here we are 2 days before a hearing, and he submitted to you a new brief making this new argument that he hid from the hearing officer and hid from the respondent. And he had previously, Mr. DiIorio had filed a complaint, and he had made this argument, and that matter was docketed at 2022-28. But that complaint was withdrawn by the complainant prior to hearing. And in addition, there was an email request directly from the complainant, not his lawyer that time, to the Department of Banking, again raising this 36A21E argument. The request was denied, and an explanation of how he was misconstruing that statute was provided to him. He did not file a complaint to the commission ever, let alone within 30 days of that denial of his request for those records. So, you know, the commission's proceedings are done subject to the UAPA. And the UAPA does require that the respondent receive a reference to the particular sections of the statutes or regulations involved in a short and plain statement of the matters asserted. His complaint simply does not comply with the UAPA. It also doesn't comply with the Commission's rules of practice, which specify the form of complaint. That's at 21J-28, and that requires a concise statement of the relevant facts, a copy of pertinent correspondence or other documents, and an explanation of any unusual circumstances involved in the complaint to which the Commission shall be expected to direct its particular attention. He simply failed to identify 36A21E in any of these documents that are a part of this case, and instead waited to the last moment to attempt, for a reason that completely escapes me, why he would hide this from the hearing officer. So the hearing officer has gone to the trouble of reviewing the motion and issuing a proposed order based on the complaint and based on the pleadings before her. And yet, frankly, I think it's an abuse of the administrative process of the commission to sandbag the hearing officer and to not be forthright about the nature of his complaint. If this is what it is, he can complain on this basis and we can have a hearing on this basis. But what he can't do is hide his basis and sandbag the commission. I think that's it. I'm gonna ask the commission to please adopt the hearing officer's proposed order and leave Mr. DiIorio to his remedies at law. If he wants to litigate this issue, he needs to identify it in his complaint, and it will be responded to appropriately at that time.
Thank you. Attorney Harmon.
So, Alicia Harmon, counsel to the commission. So, as this commission knows, these records, through a previous hearing officer and subsequently by a final decision of this commission, have been adjudicated exempt. And so the statutory provision that was looked at in that previous case, 2019-0650, is a mandatory exemption. And paraphrasing a little bit, it says the following records of the Department of Banking shall not be disclosed by the commissioner or any employee of the Department of Banking or be subject to public inspection or discovery. And then we have A1 records, which are examination and investigation reports, A2 records, which are confidential supervisory or investigative information and records, A3 records, which is information obtained, collected, or prepared in connection with examination, inspections, or investigations, and complaints received by the public, by the Department of Banking. And then subsection D records, which is information received through an agreement with another entity, so a sharing agreement. So, and then at the very end of this statutory provision, at the very end of 36A-21, in subsection E, it says, basically, by the way, the confidentiality provisions of this section shall not apply to records relating to employment history or to records concerning publicly adjudicated disciplinary and enforcement actions. Neither of the arguments that the complainant has raised in the case before the commission today changes anything. The first argument raised by the complainant in the complaint to the commission was that the 36A21 CA argument, one basis of exemption that this commission found, no longer holds true, because that particular exemption within the statutory provision says information obtained, collected, or prepared in connection with examinations, inspections, or investigations is going to be exempt. Investigative information, disclosure of which would be prejudicial to such investigation, until such time as the investigation and all related administrative and legal actions are concluded. That was the complainant's first argument, that the actions have concluded, so this A3 exemption no longer holds true. That doesn't change what this commission said in the previous decision, because that wasn't the only basis for finding the exemptions exempt. The commission found certain records exempt under A3, but also under A1 and A2, which are permanent mandatory exemptions. So that was the first argument that this commission received. And I adjudicated that argument in recommending that we grant the motion to dismiss. And then in response to the hearing officer's report, the complainant came up with this 36A-21E, this, by the way, last provision in the statutory scheme that says the confidentiality provisions, the mandatory confidentiality provisions in this statute are not going to apply to employment histories or publicly adjudicated disciplinary or enforcement actions. But that doesn't change the commission's previous decision, because the previous hearing officer and subsequently this commission has determined what the records are. This commission has determined in my paragraph 6 that these are A1 records, A2 records, A3A records, and 21D records. So the fact of the matter is that perhaps employment histories and publicly adjudicated disciplinary and enforcement action records are not going to be confidential. But that's not what this commission determined the records at issue are. So even though that argument wasn't raised to me initially, I did consider it in the brief, but it doesn't change my recommendation to the commission. These records that are being re-requested again are subject to mandatory exemptions. And even though the temporal one has perhaps lifted, it doesn't change the fact that this commission found those records exempt under other mandatory provisions that do not have a temporal limitation. So I stand by my recommendation to the commission.
Thank you.
Any commissioners have any comments?
No, thank you.
So we'll read the decision. So two out of the three are non-temporal.
So, right? So
I mean, that's basically, you have three of them, so two of them are non-temporal.
There's four of them. So there's the A1, the A2, the A3, and then the D. the sharing agreement.
So three out of four are non-temporal.
That's right, Commissioner. And then the A3A is temporal. So even if the adjudication and all the administrative actions have concluded, which the respondents dispute, it doesn't matter even if it is true, because right. The commission found the records were exempt pursuant to other mandatory non-temporal exemptions.
Right. May I please just,
sure.
Just respond? Okay. First of all, our underlying request is under 36A21, not any specific section of 36A21. We specified the entire provision of law. Second, 36A21E does not say or, it says and, which is critical. Not only the 36A21E didn't come out of nowhere, 36A21E came out of Public Act 09-209, which is the implementation of the SAFE Act, which directly ties to a federal law, HERA, in 2008, in which this same provision exists. The temporal provision in E applies to the entire section of law. 36A21E applies to the entire section of law, unambiguously. And there are two temporal limitations. They are records related to publicly adjudicated enforcement actions and employment records of a specific party, persons on the system. We never intended to limit our argument to 3C. We have additional arguments based upon other evidence obtained since this decision was rendered that will come into play only through a hearing and only through witnesses and only through evidence to show reasons why A isn't applicable, B isn't applicable, C isn't applicable. But even beyond that, 36A21E applies to the entire section of law, not any one provision. And the difference in the and and or is significant. So please take the time to look at it. All we want is a fair hearing on 36A21. And we think, you know, the bait and switch thing, there's no legitimacy to that. It's a conclusory statement, okay, based upon no evidence in the record. That is not what we were trying to do. We're trying to get access to public records that are publicly available under 36A21.
I just have one question for that. So based on what the complaint was saying, so if you, is this sort of just generally saying 36A21, would that be similar to just saying it's exempt under 1-10 without listing anything, or do you have to specifically
request? I think that's great, Commissioner. I think that a 36A21, A1, A2, A3, and then the commission also determined D. The only temporal limitation in the exemptions and really in the characterization of how this commission saw these records, they were in camera. The commission has characterized what these records are in that previous decision. The one temporal limitation is 36A21A3A. Subsection E is not a temporal limitation. Subsection E simply says, with regard to employment histories and publicly adjudicated disciplinary and enforcement actions, the confidentiality provisions are not going to apply. Not that they apply for some period of time and then are lifted. They don't apply to these records. But this commission has already looked at these records and characterized what these records are. And so, just because one temporal limitation is lifted, it doesn't change the nature of the characterization of those records in that previous decision. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would just say, I think I heard Mr. DiIorio just tell the commission that he was withholding this argument until he got into a hearing. And that doesn't meet the standards of the UAPA. or the rules of practice of this commission. A person who complains has to say what they're complaining about. And for him to say now that this other statute is what I was complaining about is improper. We responded to the complaint that was before us. His complaint doesn't just say 36A21. He writes to the commission, the requests at issue are not exempt from disclosure because inter alia, the investigation and administrative and legal actions have been concluded. 36A21A3A. So in our motion, we addressed the claim of 36A21A3A. And in response, not a mention of 36A21A.
I would just say, this is Attorney Harmon for the record, if I thought that 36A21E should change my recommendation, I would be pulling it from the commission right now, but it does not. So even though it was raised at a late date, I still considered that argument in determining whether I should stand by my report to this commission, and I believe that the report still holds up.
Thank you. And entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Paul and Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you both.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for your argument.
We are not going to get a report on pending appeals today. Nothing major happening here. Let's see, item number four, I don't have anything specific under executive director's report. Item number five, staff reports. I've got two things to report. One is that Russell has joined us on staff, and he is right there, Russell Blair. He's
welcome.
We're calling him the new Tom, but someday he'll get his own official title at some point. But we've got him answering questions and going to speaking engagements and learning the ropes. So
has he met the old Tom?
Oh yes,
yeah,
Tom is assisting. Tom is assisting Russell at this point in time. And the second report, we have Russell joining us, but we have Kathleen Ross leaving us. So I know she might have spoken to a few of you individually, but she will be leaving the commission at the end of next week.
Oh my gosh.
And headed That's to quick. Another state agency. We'll get the benefit of her expertise, not only on FOI, but other matters, I'm sure. So we're wishing her well, but sad to see her go.
How long is she here?
Kathleen, you answer that one.
17
years.
17 years?
Short timer.
Wow.
Great job.
You will be missed.
Thank you. I'll miss you too.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for
all the education you gave me and us. Yeah.
So after that, let's see, our legislative report. Paul, I was just going to highlight just a few things. We have a lot going on. We won't belabor it, but there's just a couple of things we'll give you an update on.
So we've been monitoring, I think we're over 200 bills at this point, and it's really busy. And for the next commission meeting, I'll send out sort of a list of what I call the hot bills to let you know what the status is. But I just wanted to highlight a few, like Colleen said. So we've been working or having discussions with the Connecticut Police Chiefs Association. They've put forward a bill to allow law enforcement agencies to charge labor costs for redacting body cam footage or dashboard cam footage. So there is a proposal in front of the Government Administration Selection Committee. There was a hearing. We testified on it. We've come a long way with the police chiefs. They've taken into consideration a lot of our concerns and, you know, making sure that a fee is reasonable and not, you know, that's not really going to be much of a hurdle to people asking for records. So we continue to work with them. There's been a lot of back and forth. So that's where we are. That unfortunately, the same bill has some new exemptions being proposed, where it would allow police departments to redact footage of the inside of a private residence, or if someone is in the state of undress or nudity. So there's these concerns about invasion of privacy, but those we've objected to, the proposed exemptions. Kind of if there's an arrest being made at somebody's home, you should be able to see what's going on during that arrest. So we do have issues with that. I have to say, it wasn't the Police Chiefs Association, at least that's what they reported to us. It wasn't something that they put in their main concern. I mean, they were in favor of the exemptions, but it wasn't something they put in. It was something that some legislators were interested in doing. So that's first. There's another bill that deals with research done by public universities. It's a very broad exemption. We believe it's a very broad exemption that would allow public universities to withhold any, essentially, the way it's written, the proposal is written, essentially any record pertaining to research or studies being conducted by staff or faculty at those universities. There's no temporal, we've been talking a lot about temporal requirements, nothing. It was just, it could be indefinitely that you couldn't see that information unless, you know, the professor decides to release it or it's patented or copyrighted. So that one, we have some significant concerns about that proposal. There are several proposals dealing with the address exemption. We see those every year. New one this year that we hadn't seen deals with election workers. What's interesting about that is that some election workers are public employees, but others are not public. They're volunteers, sort of. You know, there was a volunteer on election day. So, and with that one, we're also concerned because it really opens it up to public records that are not covered at this point. So that's another proposal. But it's not surprising that we see the residential address exemption. Another, we've seen it for years now. There's always a group that wants to be added to it. Whistleblower complaints, the auditors, and it's in the a proposal that was submitted by the auditors, but it has the support of the Attorney General's office, that would completely exempt from disclosure whistleblower complaints. As the commission knows, that's an issue that you have dealt with. In the most recent decision, we did find that under current law, that particular complaint was exempt from disclosure, just by virtue of the fact that there was, it was looking at that complaint, it would reveal the identity of the whistleblower, as you know, is protected. But so our argument has been made that you should look at it on a case-by-case basis, as opposed to completely exempting it, completely exempting the complaint in its entirety. So that, unfortunately, that one did make it out of committee today. It made it out of committee. There were some, dialogue. The two ranking chairs did express concerns with that. One voted it through still, the other one did vote against the bill. I'm not surprised. This particular bill, it's either the second or third time that it's been brought, so I wasn't surprised that it made it out of committee, so we'll see where it goes. And lastly, and I don't know if you have seen this in the paper or not, as you are aware, and came on the heels of all the stories dealing, we believe this is where it's coming from, the heels of stories with Bridgeport and all the issues that the city is having, to put it in a nice way, that they're having. There has been a proposal to increase the penalties that the commission can impose, going from a maximum of $1,000 to a maximum of $10,000. There's also another, within that same proposal, it would allow the commission to go to court if it finds that the city or the state or the public agency, I forget how they phrase it, it's, there's an obstruction of access to records. So that's not something that we can do now to just to go to court. We can only go to court when we've had a decision. Well, that will be the real court, when a complainant or a respondent files an appeal. So that has some support from both parties, both sides. So the other, just before I forget, there is a different section on that same bill. There's a requirement that agencies compile and maintain lists of all their FOI requests and the status of responding. Now, the way the proposal is written would require them to do it on a monthly basis. I think, you know, we've expressed concern that that might be they're creating records. That it might be a little burdensome to do it on a monthly basis. Basically, like what you would do is like, we've received this request. This is the status of the request. Thinking maybe you need a longer period of time. Maybe we didn't, I don't think we actually gave a time frame. And also the question needs to be clarified. Is it for every request? You know, if it's a request like today, when someone goes up to the counter and asks for the record, is that considered a request? Do you need to account for that? If someone just comes in and asks you for a copy of minutes and you have them there, do you have to keep track of that when you just give it to the individual right there? So we'll see. But the bill had Colleen testify last week on a number of the bills, and you know, they seemed interested in that. I think the most questions were on that bill and the police.
And the body camera bill.
So there are a number of others, and
others,
but I wanted to highlight those for now.
Yes. So I just want to share. So while you're talking, I Googled UConn, and of course, the one sentence that comes up, a top-ranked research institution with campuses and staff across Connecticut built to inspire the global community that is UConn. So of course, they want to be considered anything just UConn. Believe me, I'm a bachelor's and a master's from UConn, but I know that their history is.
And it's an interesting proposal because throughout the country, different states handle it differently. In some states, public universities are completely, not just research, they're just exempt from disclosure. Exempt. Yeah. So that they're not subject to FOI. So it's interesting. And another thing, and just before I forget, another thing that we pointed out is that there are existing exemptions that we think would cover some of their concerns. So,
That's enough legislatively,
right?
Yeah, tell us about it.
And did you work for all 200?
Well, we have a nice team working on it.
I just want to give a shout to the legislative team. They've been great helping monitor the bills, and it'd be hard to do it, you know, to monitor so many bills that come out of the legislature without some assistance. So. Anyway, just wanted to say thank you.
Good group working with us. Before we close, I feel like I maybe gave Kathleen a little short shrift. First of all, I just would really love the minutes to reflect that we thank her for her many years of service to the commission, to the staff, to me personally. So I think that would be great. And then I just wanted to let you know we are doing a little luncheon for Kathleen next week, and I'll ask Cindy to send you some information about that. If there's any chance anyone could make it, that would be great.
Congratulations on your new job.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move you adjourned.
Second. Motion's made and seconded. Take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn, I suppose so. Commissioner Hankin.
Absolutely.
Mr. Strader.
I'm thinking so.
And myself, all even, yes. Thank you all.
Good job, everyone. Yes.
Always good stuff at our meetings, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. You want to talk?
Yeah.
You can
stay here if you want.
Yeah, let's stay here. Oh, and how are you guys today?
I'm good.
I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm